Welcome to Matt Mercer Live on News 104.5 WOKV-FM Jacksonville, broadcasting from the Cox Media Studios out of Jacksonville, Florida, and 100,000 watts of radio power. Now in our sixth year, continuously broadcasting on WOKV, helping you make sense out of the law, making sense out of business, making sense out of consumer stuff, a full hour-long show during your dinner time drive. Man, we've got a lot of stuff tonight during our hour-long broadcast. A couple of ways you can plug into the show, by the way. You can call me right now at 904-659-LAW-1. That's 904-659-5291. Or you can email the show at host@mattmercerlive.com. So let's get right into the topics tonight. Without further ado, let me tell you about a problem that happens for a lot of folks who have problems making the payments on their vehicle, right? You may know somebody, there may be somebody that you realize, man, they bought way too much car. They should not have spent $75,000 on that truck. Maybe it's an RV, maybe it's, you know, whatever, right? And they're behind on their payments, or maybe this is you, right? So one of the options sometimes you think about is, what if I just give the vehicle back, or not give it back, but you surrender it to the creditor? So you bought the vehicle from a dealer, and now you're thinking, I'm just going to give it to the creditor and make this go away so you don't have to deal with repo, so you don't have to deal with a lawsuit, you're thinking. And it sounds like a really good idea. Only there's a problem. You get a little surprise. So you surrender the possession of the vehicle and the keys to the creditor who's got the lien on the vehicle, right? And you're thinking, I'm done. Thank goodness. Well, then you get a surprise, right? A few months later, there's a knock at the door and you get served with a lawsuit by a sheriff's deputy or a private process server, and they're suing you. And you're like, whoa, wait a second. This is nuts. What's going on? That was the whole point of me surrendering the car. I thought we had a deal. No, you didn't do it right. You have to be very, very careful. So here in Florida, you need to be aware of a concept, and I want to share this with you. It's called a deficiency judgment. And so what is a deficiency judgment? By the way, deficiency judgments work differently depending upon what type of collateral. If it's a home, sometimes you may do like turn over your keys to your home to avoid a foreclosure. There can be a deficiency situation there as well. So right now I want to talk about vehicle deficiencies. What is a deficiency? All right, this idea is that the creditor, let's say your credit union, maybe your bank, they come to you and they send you a notice, right, that indicates that they intend to sell your vehicle. And you think, oh, that's fine. I just surrendered it to them. I'm sure they're going to sell it and no problem. The problem is, though, that sometimes they will then come after you for the shortfall. What's the shortfall? The deficiency. The difference between what you allegedly owed on that vehicle, what you allegedly owed, less. Now, this is the way the banks will often describe it, and it's not the law. The banks are often wording this in their little letter to you that you're subject to having to pay a deficiency, and that may not actually be the case. And that's a little secret. That's a secret sauce, the magic formula we're going to talk about tonight on Matt Mercer Live. So what do we mean? Deficiency, the bank will send you a letter after they sell your vehicle that you've surrendered, and they'll oftentimes say, well, you owe a deficiency because the sales price that we got for your vehicle was only, let's say, make up a number. They sold it for $5,000. And you're thinking, man, that vehicle was worth at least $20,000 or something. And the bank says, so if you owed $30,000 and the bank says they sold it for $5,000, the difference there is $25,000. There's the deficiency, right? That's how the bank is going to try to tell you, this is what you owe. This is the deficiency. What you owe less what they're able to garner from selling it to somebody in the public, let's say. All right. Well, that spread may be not consistent with Florida law. Let's talk about that. You get sued for that $25,000 deficiency. That's our hypothetical. And you're thinking, oh my goodness, what do I do? Well, there's a couple of things you need to be aware of. First of all, you need to understand that before you surrender your vehicle or before you surrender, let's say even on real estate, which is not quite what we're talking about today, but if you're going to do sort of a cash for keys or what we call a deed in lieu of foreclosure for your house because you can't make your house payments and you want to just give title, cooperate with the lender, it's really, really important. You need to negotiate before you actually give them title, before you actually give them the vehicle. Try to negotiate or have an attorney try to negotiate what we call a waiver of deficiency. When you do a waiver of deficiency on the front end, the bank may be like, oh, yeah, that's fine. We'll give you a waiver of deficiency. That would mean, if it's in writing and done properly, that they won't actually come after you later for that deficiency. When they sue you for that deficiency, what that means is the bank is trying to get a money judgment. So to add insult to injury, in addition to you losing your vehicle, now they're going to try to get a money judgment that may allow them to garnish your wages, garnish your bank account, you know, levy on, you know, personal property like furniture and other things, and do this over and over for up to 20 years. So this can be a really, really bad situation. A little bit of negotiation tactically done on the front end, right, to try to see if they can get that waiver of deficiency is super, super important. Now, what happens so often, and so my law practice, which is Mercer Kutch, you can check this out on the web, by the way, at mercerkutch.com. That's MERCERKUTCH.com. So we deal with a lot of different types of cases. I mean, many, many types of legal cases. But one that we get a lot of, particularly when the economy is not doing so well, when interest rates are high and that sort of a thing, we've got these situations where people are facing deficiencies. Let's say you forgot, you didn't know to negotiate with your lender a waiver of deficiency. What are some of the things that you can do? Well, first of all, you need to get a lawyer to try perhaps before suit is filed, right? Before that boulder starts rolling down the hill with a lawsuit by the lender, by the bank, by the credit union against you for that deficiency, you need to try to see if you can keep the boulder at the top of the hill. You know, it's a lot easier if you put your finger on the top of the rock, it's not likely to blow with the wind and roll down the hill. But once it starts to tumble, and once that lawsuit's filed against you, it can be harder, more difficult to stop. Now, the approach that we take, and this is where we need to educate the bank and educate oftentimes the bank's attorneys, because you'd be surprised how often the banks, the bigger the banks, by the way, often will hire the C students in law school. They'll hire some of the most average lawyers. It's unbelievable. And you'd think these big, giant, sophisticated banks would be hiring the most talented lawyers. Well, in some cases, of course, that's true. But oftentimes, they go for the cheapest for some strange reason. It's just been my experience as a litigator defending foreclosures and doing those sorts of legal cases in the court system. We do sometimes represent creditors. Of course, we do a lot of creditor collection work. We help people get paid. We help businesses get paid. We help sellers who did seller financing get paid when their person that bought their house doesn't pay. We do both sides, right? We work on the creditor side. Some cases, other cases, we'll work on the debtor side. It's really, really fun to kind of see it from both perspectives. But here's the key. The key is that we need to often educate the other lawyer or the credit union to let them know, remind them that under Florida law, the measure of the deficiency, if there is one, and that's the threshold question, is there actually even a deficiency owed? Because you, as an owner of the property, by the way, you are entitled under Florida law to testify to your own opinion of value, almost like you're an expert appraiser, even though you're not qualified or trained as an expert appraiser formally. Florida law, there is authority, there is case law that will allow you in the right context to testify, this is my opinion of the value of my property, right? And if the opinion of the value of your property, if the trier of fact agrees with you that your vehicle that was either repossessed or that you surrendered and that was sold by the bank was worth more on the day it was sold than what was allegedly owed on it, there is no deficiency, right? Or let's use that same example. Remember the $30,000 hypothetical was owed on it. The bank sells it lowball for $5,000 at a public sale or private sale rather. So that $25,000 spread, if you were to challenge that, you might be able to persuade the trier of fact, which could be a judge or a jury, you might be able to persuade them that the vehicle was actually worth $25,000, not the $5,000 that it sold for. And if you persuade them that that vehicle is worth $25,000 and all that's owed is $30,000, guess what? Magic day, you just shrunk your deficiency from owing $25,000 to just $5,000. Much better world, right? And imagine if it's a wash. Imagine if you're able to make the case that the vehicle was worth $30,000 and the alleged amount owed is $30,000, zero deficiency. So I'm mentioning making that argument in court, but the tactical best way to do that is before a suit is even filed, as I mentioned, right before that boulder goes a tumbling down the hill. So what we want to do is when you get the notice of sale that indicates they're planning on selling it, really before you should engage an attorney to negotiate for you, as I said earlier, before you even turn over the vehicle. But many people make that mistake. They go ahead and do it without negotiating a waiver of deficiency. Remember, everything's negotiable. Doesn't mean the bank will necessarily agree. We can make that case. Now, if they go to sale before the lawsuit gets filed, it's a great time to have an attorney reach out and take the position with your credit union that there is no deficiency, right? This is before they file suit, before they've really decided to hand the file over to their attorney to file suit against you for that $25,000 deficiency. Well, great time to reach out and let the bank know. Here's why. We have an opinion of value that the value of the vehicle in our client's opinion was worth what is allegedly owed on it. Therefore, it's a wash. Therefore, no deficiency. Therefore, go off into the sunset, Mr. Credit Union. Have a nice day. Now, the credit union doesn't have to agree with that. They may decide, you know what? We think it was worth a lot less than $30,000 because there is this idea, right? As a consumer, you know this. Generally, the value of a vehicle goes down over time. There's that old adage that the minute you drive off a car lot, your vehicle's probably worth, some people say, the legend is 20 to 25% less, right, when you just drive off the lot. But that's not always true. There are times when certain vehicles will actually go up in value. I mean, you take, for example, like a Cessna airplane, right? Cessna airplane that might have been built back in 1980, way back, is worth a lot more today than what it was brand new back then. Some vehicles, though they are much, much older, decades older, can be worth more. Another recent example would be Tesla. There was a period of time in 2022 when you bought a new Tesla for X price, because at that time in 2022, the new Tesla prices kept going up and the demand was through the roof, that the waiting period for a new Tesla might be 9 months or so, right? So there was a weird anomaly where you could buy a car, a brand new Tesla, and then after you had driven it a little bit, you may actually sell it for more than what you paid for it brand new, because there was a segment in the marketplace here in America where people were like, I don't want to wait 9 months for a brand new Tesla. I'll pay more for one that's slightly used and have my cake now. I don't want to wait. It's like delayed gratification, as Dave Ramsey talks about, right? So there are times that vehicles actually are worth more used, right? 64 Corvette today worth a lot more than when it was new. So this is a really interesting thing. The goal is when you reach out to the bank with an attorney to try to help negotiate that, if you can make the case that there is no deficiency judgment and the credit union decides, you know, they're going to put up a fight, it's going to be expensive if we go and deal with this, let's just write it off and let's move forward to the next claim, that's golden. That's wonderful. That's success. You want to avoid a deficiency judgment if possible, right? Same thing with real estate, right? If you're going to do a deed in lieu of foreclosure, so big bank is coming up and they're going to foreclose on you, you can't make your payments, maybe you lost your job, life happens, right? So you need to be very tactical. You need to negotiate a waiver of deficiency. Have an attorney help you with that so that you're having an attorney on the tip of the spear of that negotiation. That's going to give you an advantage. They're also going to be more likely to waive a deficiency if they know you have an attorney. In my opinion, they're going to be more likely to, because they realize that that foreclosure and trying to get a deficiency would be an uphill battle. So if they can get you to surrender a deed to your house and they can agree to, you can get them to agree to waive a deficiency on the front end, that's all they get. They only get your house. And if you were going to lose it anyway in foreclosure, you don't want to have the loss of your house on the foreclosure, on the courthouse steps, the sale, and then have them sue you for that deficiency. Now, the deficiency judgment works a little bit differently in real estate. We're going to take a commercial break, and we'll talk a little bit about that. We've got so many more topics tonight on Matt Mercer Live. Remember, check out our law firm website at MercerKutch.com and also the show's website at MattMercerLive.com. I'm attorney Matt Mercer, the law firm Mercer Kutch. We'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back to Matt Mercer Live. I'm your host, attorney Matt Mercer of the law firm Mercer Kutch, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. Man, oh man, oh man, we're rolling into our second segment here. And before we get back into the topic of deficiency judgments and how to avoid if you are a consumer or even if you're a business owner, you're facing maybe losing a vehicle, you're facing losing your house in foreclosure, and we're talking about how to tactically avoid not just losing that item if possible. I mean, if you're going to lose it anyway, you need to look at getting a deficiency waiver in your negotiations. And we're talking about on the real estate side here in segment two. I want to mention also that there are a number of things you can do before you sort of fall trapped to the invitation by your creditor, by your lender, who says, you know, here is what, you know, your only options are these, because you're maybe in a difficult life circumstance. You really should take half an hour, have an initial consultation with an attorney, and find out if maybe on the buffet table there are some better options. Remember, oftentimes the bank is going to give you the option that is best for them, right? For the bank, not for you. So be careful. Be careful doing that. Let's talk about the real estate deficiency. So the real estate deficiency, again, this idea that you either do a deed in lieu of foreclosure, that means you know you're going to lose the house eventually because you're not paying your mortgage, you know the bank is going to be filing a foreclosure suit, or maybe they have already initiated a foreclosure lawsuit against your home or against your land or your condo, whatever, and you're thinking, hey, there's not a basis to defend this. First of all, stop there. Talk to an attorney that does foreclosure defense, because many times there are ways to defend foreclosure lawsuits, really incredible ways, often, right? There could be a legal standing problem if the bank that filed suit against you isn't necessarily the bank that actually holds the paper. So there are just many, many, many different potential defenses that you can assert. And those defenses also can help increase your leverage for your attorney to then negotiate some sort of a workout, some sort of a deal with the bank that may allow you to keep the house or keep the property. So never just try to make an assumption, kind of like trying to play doctor and diagnose what you think your symptoms may be indicating. It's reckless. You really are not doing yourself a service. Go talk to a qualified physician. Find out, right? Find out what the real deal is and what the real options are. Okay. Deficiencies on real estate work a little bit differently than deficiencies on if it's a vehicle, for example. For one thing, a deficiency on a vehicle is not subject to that same short one-year statute of limitations that a bank has if they're going to move for a deficiency. A deficiency on real estate has a time limit that the bank must act within. There are also some other shortcomings, like if the bank doesn't do the notice of sale properly, if depending upon the dollar amount, they may not be legally entitled to a deficiency. These are all things that you can talk about if you're facing losing a vehicle, you're facing losing real estate in a foreclosure that you think is imminent. Talk to a lawyer that practices in that area. And make sure, by the way, ask the lawyer during the initial informal initial consultation with a lawyer, ask her, you know, how many years have you been dealing with this area of practice? If it's foreclosure defense, if it's, you know, whatever the area is, right? Whatever the legal issue is that you're having, ask, is this something that's new to your firm? Is this something new to your practice? Or have you done this before? Have you seen this before? Have you, you know, and that kind of a thing. So really good to make sure that, because it seems like the law, we're not allowed to say it's specialized, but if you think about medicine, you wouldn't want to go to your cardiologist and ask him a dermatological question, or go to your podiatrist and ask him a neurological question. It seems like maybe you talk to a podiatrist about a foot problem and a neurologist about neurological issues, right? Maybe. I'm just guessing. So let's get back to the real estate. Now, the real estate deficiency, again, it should be negotiated as a waiver before you do a deed in lieu of foreclosure, where you voluntarily surrender the keys and a deed to the lender. Never just do that. Always have an attorney negotiate to get some protective force field language for you, if possible, afterwards. Because the last thing you want to do, you give the deed to your house to the lender. And you, by the way, you may have negotiated being able to stay in it for another 6 months free. That's everything's negotiable. Rather than having to give the deed and move out, try to garner a better deal. So you've got that situation where the bank has the deed, you thought it was over, you've moved out, and then guess what? A month later, you get a knock at the door and they serve you with a summons and lawsuit papers. The bank is coming after you for a deficiency. This is what I'm saying, folks. You should negotiate a waiver of deficiency. Better yet, have an attorney who is seasoned, who understands how that should be worded, how that should be negotiated, and to try to make the case. The other thing that we do when we're negotiating for clients is we will attempt to get their credit, to get the trade references on their credit related to this bad loan. Everything's negotiable. If we can get the bank to voluntarily agree to remove the whole history of the credit of this alleged loan, and I say alleged because until a court has determined that it is in fact adjudicated to be a valid loan, it's not even a valid loan. It's an alleged loan until it's otherwise determined by a court. So if you're negotiating before there's a judgment, man, you've got lots of latitude to have an attorney help you negotiate a better deal. Doesn't always work, though. I mean, let's be realistic. Everything's negotiable. Sometimes you can get maybe this, but not that, and that type of a thing. The measure of the deficiency is really, really fascinating in a foreclosure sale. So if a foreclosure or a deed, it could be a deed in lieu. It could be that the bank goes all the way through. Your house is sold on the courthouse steps to the highest bidder following a judgment and an order of sale by a judge here in Florida. The way the deficiency works is very interesting. As I said, it is the measure of the difference between the value of the judgment, in other words, the amount, the dollar amount that's in the judgment. So let's say that the judgment is for, say, $300,000 on your house. Just use a nice even number. And that's what's in the final judgment. That's what the judge has said based on principal, based on interest and all of that, that the bank is entitled to. There's something that we're going to subtract from that number, and we'll get to that right after this commercial break, and that's going to be the determining factor of whether a bank can sue you, get another judgment against you, a deficiency judgment that will grow against you and allow them to collect, garnish wages potentially, garnish your bank account, levy on your assets for the next 20 years. We want to avoid that. I'm attorney Matt Mercer. Check us out on the web at mercerkutch.com. We'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back to Matt Mercer Live, where we're broadcasting in 100,000 watts right here from the studios at News 104.5 WOKV-FM Jacksonville. I'm attorney Matt Mercer of the law firm Mercer Kutch. By the way, you can check out our show's website at mattmercerlive.com. You can also email us 24/7 with your show topics or your questions. Many of the topics that we're covering tonight in the second half of our show are from emails from folks like you or calls from folks like you. We'll give you the email address here. It is host, H-O-S-T, at mattmercerlive.com. And the phone number is going to be 659-5291. That's area code 904-659-LAW-1. All right, let's get back into the discussion of deficiencies. So the measure of the deficiency, you take on the real estate deal, you take the amount of the judgment, and you subtract from that the value of the real estate on the day of the sale. It's not the amount that somebody bid on the real estate. Don't let a creditor ever tell you that the deficiency is what's the difference between what they sold your land for versus what is owed. That is not the law in Florida. So the reason that's important is quite often, it may surprise you, but quite often when we do foreclosures, because again, at my law firm, Mercer Kutch, we do the creditor side, we do foreclosures of liens, we do foreclosures of mortgage, but sometimes in other cases, we're defending those and we defend the foreclosures. And so it's kind of fun to work on both sides. But most often, the amount that's bid at a foreclosure sale on a house, you know what it is? Quite often, it's $100. And the reason it's $100 is because many times people are not even going to come and really bid on the real estate unless there's something very appealing about it. Because if they look and see that there's, let's say, a house that's worth $300,000 and somebody from the public is thinking about wanting to bid on that at the foreclosure auction, at the foreclosure sale, and they see that the bank's judgment is $300,000, well, they know, the bidding public knows that the bank is allowed to just bid with monopoly dollars. They get to credit bid against their judgment up to the 300. So anybody from the public has to bid using real dollars, right? And that's a little bit of a disadvantage as a practical matter, because who wants to spend $300,000 if you're bidding from the public on a house that's only worth $300,000? So if there's tremendous equity, if the amount of the judgment in the foreclosure auction, let's say the house is worth $300,000, but the bank's judgment is only worth $45,000 because so much of the bank's loan had been paid off. Well, now you've got a different situation. You've got people that are going to come and bid on that because there's a lot of equity in that real estate. So somebody would love to bid $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 for a house that's worth $300,000. Yeah, people will do that all day long. But oftentimes, it's upside down. It's the other way. When you have the bank and they've got 18% interest and all the principal, depending upon what the market's doing, you may have just a $100 bid by the judgment creditor at the foreclosure sale. So you can't have the deficiency under Florida law be the difference between the amount of the judgment and that $100. That would be absurd. That would mean that the bank, if it could come after you for that full deficiency, would be over enriched. It would be collecting too much. So what has to happen is there has to be an evidentiary hearing in court. This is after the foreclosure sale. And this is where the determination of the value of the real estate on the day of sale, it's very important, not on the day of the judgment, not on the day of this or that or the other, it's the day of the sale. And that then becomes decided by the trier of fact. So you have, the bank will have its expert appraiser. The bank's expert will testify, well, I think the bank value or the value of the house was low, right? And they'll give a dollar amount that may tend to be low. And of course, the owner side is going to put on evidence that they believe that their opinion of the value is that it was much higher, maybe even higher than the judgment. And if it's higher than the judgment, then there's no deficiency judgment. Again, what that deficiency judgment is, we covered this at the top of the show, is the right of the bank to not only basically go after your property that they have their lien against, but they have the right now to get another personal judgment against you, the debtor, that will grow with interest for 20 years, that they can now collect on. They can levy on other assets that have nothing to do with your mortgage lien, have nothing to do with the real estate, like your furniture and your, you know, your vehicles and your, and this, that, and the other, your garnish your wages, garnish your bank account. So to the extent you can avoid a deficiency, man, I mean, I cannot overstate the importance of that whole thing. So, all right, number of reasons why it's often good to try to, even if the foreclosure has been filed, the lawsuit's been filed, get a lawyer involved early on to help you strategize and see what your best options are on the buffet table. Number of other things I want to mention. By the way, my favorite Greek restaurant, love to give a plug to Athenian Owl. So if you're driving around Jacksonville tonight and you're thinking, man, I'm really kind of hungry and I'm craving something that makes me feel like I'm on a vacation, like going to the Greek Isles, really wanting some authentic Greek food, let me recommend you write this down. Athenian Owl. Where are they located? Here in Jacksonville, over on Old Bay Meadows Road. When you say, well, Old Bay Meadows, I know where Bay Meadows is. Yeah, just head down Bay Meadows like you're headed towards Southside. But Old Bay Meadows just kind of forks off to the left just before Southside Boulevard. Athenian Owl, you will thank me for it. It is wonderfully authentic Greek food. Just think of Zeus giving the gift of the owl to Athena, right, in Greek mythology. Wonderful, wonderful. Check them out. You're going to love them. All right. Oh, and by the way, I love when people send me an email and let me know that some of the things that I recommend, they try and they're like, wow, that is so awesome. On our website, by the way, you can go to mattmercerlive.com and we have a list of companies, different industries and that type of thing that I have test driven, that I recommend only on the basis of my opinion based on my having had a really positive experience with that company's service or those companies' products and that type of thing. So check that out, mattmercerlive.com. All right, next topic I want to mention is I got a question a little bit ago, not too long ago, about what does it mean to have an exclusive wholesale contract? What is it? What is exclusive, in other words? What does that word exclusive mean? Let me give you, under Florida law, sort of the general idea of an exclusive contract. If you are the provider and you are selling, let's say you're a factory and you're selling products to a company that is going to buy these products, let's say wholesale, and you're going to be selling them and you want to make sure that that company that you're selling to only uses your products. They're captive, in other words. That's what we mean by an exclusive contract. Now, exclusive has other contexts. For example, if you do a listing agreement with a real estate agent or a real estate broker, you will oftentimes see that that agreement, and of course, every agreement you're going to sign, I always say this, every contract you're going to sign, don't just sign it. Wear oven mittens so you can't grab a pen. Have a lawyer look at it because there is no such thing as a standard contract. They're all unique and you need to make sure you understand the risks or the benefits, right? But real estate listing agreements will often routinely have a reference to exclusivity, meaning that the real estate brokerage firm is going to have the exclusive right to list and sell your property for a period of time. And if you were to go out and find a buyer and sell it on your own, or you were to go out and secretly engage another real estate agency to sell the property and they find a buyer, if your first brokerage listing agreement was exclusive, you still have to pay the commission to them. So you need to kind of understand what this is. Now, the question that we got here at Matt Mercer Live was a little more in the context of a wholesale contract, and it works very similar. It's the idea that that person, if you're, let's say you're a retailer and you're retailing widgets, you're selling widgets on your store shelves, and you have a supplier that is wanting to supply you with those widgets. Well, you need to be very careful if you agree to an exclusive contract, because that means for the term of that contract, you may not be able to buy widgets from a competitor, from somebody that would be cheaper or maybe even have better quality. You may be forced to get your all of your products from that provider. So really, when you see the term exclusive, that should be a big red flag. Need to have a lawyer look at this and make sure that it makes sense and make sure that it is worded correctly so you're not captive. Of course, if you're on the manufacturer side, it might make more sense. You see these, by the way, sometimes in franchise type agreements. So let's say you're going to buy a franchise of ABC, you know, like a coffee franchise or maybe a hamburger franchise or that kind of a thing. It's not unique or unusual to see language in the franchise agreement where the franchisor makes you buy all of the equipment that you're going to use in your restaurant, all of the equipment, the booths, the artwork, the stuff that's going to, the tchotchkes that are going to hang on the wall, all your food, the food supply that you're going to sell in your franchise restaurant is going to be under an exclusive or one or more exclusive sources that the franchising parent, if you will, the franchisor will have complete control over. That would be, of course, reasonable in the sense that, if it's worded correctly, in the sense that, you know, if you're a major brand, you want to have consistency, right? You don't want to have a franchise that's in Topeka, Kansas that is getting their beef from who knows where overseas and maybe China. And then, you know, your other franchisee deciding to get their beef from Texas. You want to have control over that. And you may have an exclusive, provision, exclusivity provision in that. All right. So just be aware of that. Be cautious about any contract you're going to sign, right? If somebody's wanting you to sign it, there's a reason for it. And you can get yourself into a lot of trouble assuming that that contract is normal and standard and reasonable. There is no such thing as an industry standard form. I even tell people, even the so-called real estate contracts that are put out by the FARBAR, you know, the Florida Association of Realtors, and oftentimes the Florida Bar, there'll be sort of a joint thing, and they have different forms. And, you know, the real estate professionals will often say, well, this is the standard form. There is never a standard form in contract law theory. Every contract deserves to be read before you sign it, deserves to be understood by you before you sign it. And that does not mean that the person wanting you to sign it, maybe a realtor, is the one who should be explaining it. Because people have a tendency to say, well, all that means is, and they're not lawyers, by the way. You need to have a contract law lawyer, a lawyer who understands and practices in contract law, be able to translate not only what those words mean, because you're saying, well, I'm looking at the contract, I think I can figure the words out, but what's in between the lines there? What's implied by those words, those magic words that are in the contract? So be cautious there. Hey, by the way, there's in our technology corner, I like to cover tech. A lot of lawyers don't enjoy tech. I love tech. We really utilize tech quite a bit. One of the things I want to mention though is be cautious. You know, now we're seeing a lot of companies that are in the tech industry, they want to go into like not just you log in with your password and your username, but there's usually you're seeing a tendency now for a second layer of authentication. And that's becoming normal. And in many cases, in most cases, it's reasonable. It might be that when you log in, the provider also shoots you a text message just to make sure with a little six-digit code that that's really you logging in. And that makes sense, generally makes sense. One of the frustrating experiences I wanted to share with you from a technology standpoint, Microsoft, the great software giant, they have wonderful software products, you know, Word, Excel, and so forth. They were recently implementing something involving this authenticator app where they were trying to push you to, if you wanted to go, let's say you're a business owner and you wanted to go and try to get maybe a new employee and you buy like a Microsoft 365. There you go. You buy a license for that employee and you want them to just be able to start using the Microsoft Office products. Well, what some people were experiencing was frustration. Because they'd pay for the license for the new employee. They'd install everything as they've done a million times before in the past with Microsoft products. And then all of a sudden, when they try to open an app like Teams or Word or whatever, they were experiencing, sorry, you have to go now and get this separate app called the Microsoft Authenticator app and go jump through flaming hoops like a poodle at the circus to try to figure out how to get these apps that you've already paid for, like Word, to just even open. Frustrating out the wazoo. And I know this has affected a lot of people. One of the things, and then you're like, well, how do you turn it off? Good luck calling Microsoft. Good luck trying to get tech support because they're so big. You know, you just can't, it seems like. So one of the things you can do is just be careful if you are the administrator for your business or if you are having this on a personal level. If you can go into your Office 365 settings and turn off the language that references having a second layer of authentication, turn it off, right? You, of course, always have cyber risk if you do that a little bit because now you're down to your username and password, but it's like, hey, it's my Microsoft account. How secret, how big of a deal is that? It's not like a bank account. But by turning that off, it gets rid of this rabbit hole of the Authenticator app. When we get back from this commercial break, I'm going to close the loop a little bit on that, and we're going to roll into some other great legal topics. I'm attorney Matt Mercer of the law firm Mercer Kutch. We'll be back in a few. Welcome back to Matt Mercer Live, where we're broadcasting from the studios here in Jacksonville, Florida at News 104.5 WOKV FM. Man, the fastest hour in my week. And I tell you what, I love it. I love it. I love it. We've got so many things. I wish I could have like a 2-hour show. We've got so many more topics. But let me also share with you again the call-in number for Matt Mercer Live. You can call right now or 24/7 and you're going to be able to park your different show topics, ideas, or your legal questions that for entertainment purposes, you wouldn't mind being shared on the broadcast on the air on a future show. That number is 904-659. Law 1. That's 904-659-5291. And again, same thing. You can email the show at the following email address. I always tell folks, write this down. It's host, H-O-S-T, at mattmercerlive.com. That's host at mattmercerlive.com. So, well, on this authenticator app problem that Microsoft was trying to apparently get folks to go download a totally separate app and install that app and then like authentic, it was just a pain. And then we actually did a test experiment with it just to see, okay, well, it seems really tedious and like completely frustrating because normally when you open up Microsoft Office, you want to open up Word, go right into it. And with this second layer of authentication, which, you know, the solution for some is just turn that off so it doesn't make you do this authenticator app. You install this authenticator app and then it all of a sudden says that it, Microsoft Authenticator, wants to get access to all of your contacts on your smartphone. Wait a second. That has nothing to do with authenticating anything. That's nuts. So if you cancel out of that and then you just say, look, I just want to open up Word. I've got a license on 365 Office for Word. I just want to open it. Well, it won't until you do the authenticator app. So the solution you might try if you're really, really frustrated with what appears to be a fairly recent requirement by Microsoft, if you turn off the requirement in 365 administration for requiring a second level of authentication. So that all it is user ID and login, the way it always has been. Simple. It just works. Makes that frustrating problem go away. Okay, a couple other things I want to mention here. On our show, we have 1 hour to pack in all of this information. There's not enough time to get through all the topics. Please do send us your topic ideas, though, to host@mattmercerlive.com. I also want to mention recruiting. I know we've got a lot of lawyers who listen to the show. We've even got, in the past, we've had retired judges that have called in, and we've had great interactions with folks that are interested in the law. Also, law students and that type of thing. I want to mention right now, my law firm right here in Jacksonville, Florida, that's where we're based, Mercer Cutch. I'll give you the website in a second. We have a job opening. So if you are an associate attorney, or you are particularly if you are a civil litigator, if you're interested in civil litigation, you have experience in civil litigation, you love civil litigation, I want you to check out our jobs page on the Mercer Cutch website. That website, to write it down. And by the way, not just you, but I know a lot of times we have parents and we have siblings, we have friends of folks who are friends of folks with, that are lawyers, and that would be another way. You know, you've got your sister who you know is unhappy where she is, practicing with that big giant firm. It's a sweatshop. She is a good, talented lawyer. She's bright. She's just looking for a much better work environment, a much better opportunity like civil litigation. Hey, check out Mercer Cutch on the website, www.mercer, that's MercerCutch.com. That's MercerCutch.com. Check out our jobs page because we're growing and expanding and we love getting talented people. And that's the big differentiator with us. We make the practice of law fun. It's interactive. We take a team approach in many cases and we just make sure that the work environment is positive. We don't like working nights. We don't want to work weekends. We want to have most Fridays off, right? We want to have balance. And when we're there Monday to Thursday, we want to work hard. We want to work smart. We are results oriented, but we also realize you can make that fun and have a good work-life balance at the same time. So check out our jobs page at MercerCutch.com. It may just be for you. All right. I'm attorney Matt Mercer of the law firm Mercer Cutch. You've been listening to Matt Mercer Live. We will be back next week with all new content. Have a great one.